This week's parsha is Parshas Vayeshev, and we will be starting. I'm going to jump around a little bit. So we're going to start on page 210. Page 210. Okay. So at this point in the parsha, we have Yosef has already been sold by his brothers, and Yehuda leaves his family and goes on his own. And the Torah tells us how he married a woman. He had three sons. He took a wife, Tamar, for his oldest son. He died, told his brother to marry his sister-in-law. He died. And he was too scared to give his third son to Tamar, and told her to go home to her father and stay there as a widow until Shelah, the third son, is old enough to grow up and get married. Time passed and nothing was happening. The Torah tells us that Yehuda's wife died, and that he went to shear his sheep with his friend. And this is what we begin on page 210. By you, God. L'samar Lamar, it was told to Tamar, saying, "Hinei chamich oile Timnas, and behold, your father-in-law is going up to Timnas, Lagoi Sinai, to shear his sheep." Batatsa Bigdal Manusame Aleha. She removed the clothing of her widowhood from upon her. Batachas Batsuif, and she covered herself with a veil. Batisalof, and she wrapped herself up. Batesh Bepesach Hainayim Asher Alderach Timnas, and she sat at the crossroads, which was on the road to Timnas. Kirasa kigadal Shelah, because she saw that Shelah had grown up, v'hilo nitna lo le'isha, and she was not given to him as a wife. So basically, she is planting herself on the road, where Yehuda's going to pass, and somehow or another, she has some kind of a plan here, because of the fact that she was not given to Shelah to be married to. Vayir'eha Yehuda. So the Torah says Yehuda saw her, vayechshevel lazayna, and thought that she was a prostitute. Ki chitzasa paneah, because she covered her face. That's very interesting that the Medrash actually says that ki chitzasa, Rashi brings down on these words, ki chitzasa paneah, v'lo yochel eisa l'akira. According to the basic interpretation, he couldn't see her, couldn't see who she was. Umedrash Rabbi Yisaidu kissa paneah, she covered her face. Kshahiz Mabeis Chamiya, when she was in her father-in-law's house, meaning when she was actually married to his sons, Haisatsnua, she was very modest. Levihach Leichashta, and therefore he didn't suspect her. Meaning, in essence, that because of the fact, according to the way the Medrash says it, because of the fact that in her father-in-law's house she always covered her face, you know, he had no way of recognizing her. Rashi brings down, because of that, he would never suspect that it was her. The Medrash here brings down that he didn't recognize her. And actually, the Medrash says that because of what happened to Yehuda, although a person should be very careful not to gaze, and to clearly from the Medrash, it's a proper thing to refrain from looking at your daughters-in-law, according to what the Medrash says, or according to other relatives that you're forbidden to marry, a certain familiarity, a certain recognition you better have. Because if you don't recognize them, you can get messed up like Yehuda did. You can land up at a different point of time, perhaps marrying one of them and not even knowing that it was someone they were forbidden to. So that's one pshat the Medrash brings down. But then the Medrash brings down another explanation. And the Medrash in this, and let's just read a little further. So Pasuk Tesvav says, "Vayira Yehuda b'chshol hazan ki chisa paneha," because she covered her face. Now it says, "Vayet eleha el aderech." So he detoured to her to the path. I mean, he was going on his way, and he saw her. Sabayet means he went in that direction. He leaned towards her. They translate it as he detoured towards her. And he propositioned her. Now, the Medrash brings down an opinion that what happened is like this. The Pasuk says that a Yehuda saw her, thought she was a Zayna because she covered her face. Vayet Eleha. So there is an opinion of the Medrash that says like this. Amar Rabbi Yechanan stated, Bikesh La'avar, Yehuda wanted to pass by. Just because he saw that woman there was not a reason that automatically he was going to go over there. He was ready to pass her up. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent him an angel who was appointed over desire, over lust. Omar lay, and he said to him, Yehuda, where are you going? From where will kings stand? From where will kings come from? From where will great people come from? And therefore the Pasuk says that he leaned towards her. What does that mean? Bal karchai, against his will, shaloi b'tevasai, not for his benefit. Now, so what this Medrash is saying is that Yehuda was going to pass by, and basically HaKadosh Baruch Hu built up his taiva, built up his lust, to the point that he couldn't control himself. Couldn't control himself. He would have resisted on his own, he would have passed it up, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent a malach, or whatever it means, malach, or whatever it means, HaKadosh Baruch Hu built up his lust to the point that he couldn't resist. And the Malach said to Yehuda, not that Yehuda heard this message necessarily, but basically the point is that the whole idea was that Yehuda was going to pass her by, but Yehuda had to marry her. Yehuda had to make a union with her because it was from this marriage that great, that kings and great people, and as we know, Mashiach was meant to come from. And therefore, he couldn't let him pass by. He had to basically make him, he had to force him to go over to her. And the Medrash mentions these words, Vayet Eloha, and he leaned towards her. The Mefarshim say that if it just meant that on his own he went over to her, they would have said he went to her. We would have just said he went to her. He saw her and he went to her. Now that it doesn't just say he went to her, it says Vayet, he detoured, he leaned, he went in that direction. That not usual way of describing what he did is meant to say that this was unusual. And that it wasn't, I mean, that he did willingly, but it was something that he did bal karchai, against his will, shaloi b'tayvasai, not for his benefit. Now, what do those words mean? Bal karchai means against his will. He on his own, he would have passed her up, and I should basically create a situation where he couldn't control himself. But what does it mean, shaloi b'tayvasai, not for his benefit? On the contrary, it was for his benefit. That's what the Malach said. You know, where are the kings going to come from? Where are the great people going to come from? Where's Mashiach going to come from? So what does the Medrash mean when it says, against his will, shaloi b'tayvasai, not for his good? So Rabbi Zev Lef of Eretz Yisrael gives the following explanation. And to appreciate this explanation, we need to turn to Parshas Re'eh, and we need to go to page 1010. Page 1010.
Was she a...
Let's just finish this first. Okay, page 1010. And it's Pasuk Yud Ches, verse 18. Now this is talking about where the Jewish people find out that a city has at least a city in its majority have all decided to go and worship idols. And because of that city has to be destroyed. And anything that is left over in that city, any property, is forbidden to take from. So Pasuk Yud Ches reads, and nothing from the man's property shall cling to you, so that God will relent from his anger, and give you mercy, and have mercy on you, v'herbecha, and multiply you. So the Pasuk is saying that when you do this, Hashem's anger will go away, and he'll have mercy on you, and he'll multiply you as he promised your forefathers. What does it mean when the Pasuk says, Hashem will give you mercy and have mercy on you? What are the two things here? What is he will give you mercy and he'll have mercy on you? What are those two things exactly? So the commentaries explain that what it means is like this. What it means is that, you know, any act that we do, or especially an act that's a very traumatic act, That's how I would understand it. Leaves an impression on us. And even if you have a mitzvah to wipe out a city, and you're only doing it because there's a mitzvah, you're not doing it for any other reason, at the end of the day, an act of murder leaves its mark on a person. Leaves a mark. Even if you're supposed to do it, even if it's a mitzvah to do, it leaves a mark on you. And therefore, what the Torah is saying here is, "V'nasa l'cha rachamim," he will give you mercy, means to say that Hashem is promising the Jewish people that when you perform this mitzvah of wiping out the city, Hashem will give you mercy, which means that the mercy that you might lose due to this act, because such an act leaves an effect on a person, Hashem says, I'm gonna replace it. I'm going to make sure that it doesn't affect you. He will give you mercy. That means what you would be losing because of this, what you would be losing in your character of killing someone, which creates cruelty, that Hashem says, I'll give you mercy. I'll make sure it doesn't affect you. I'll make sure that you have mercy. The mercy that you would lose due to this act of cruelty, I will make sure that you have it. That's what it means. He'll give you mercy. The mercy that you would have lost because of this act, even though it's a mitzvah, but the mercy you would lose because of this act, the cruelty you develop from this act, Hashem says, I'll make up with it because I will make sure, I will send you the trait of mercy, and it will have no, and this act of killing out the city will not have any kind of negative effect.
I think we learned the same way when he told him to wipe out Amalek.
Okay. Okay. So now,
you'll go and kill. Good.
So says Rev Lef that what is happening here, what the Medrash here means to say is about Yehuda, that even though Yehuda was forced into this act, he didn't want to do it, but he did it. And doing such an act would leave its mark.
No.
It would leave its mark. It would leave its effect.
If you do something,
meaning basically, Yehuda now would have to deal with the effects of what happened. So it was Baal Karchai. It was against his will, but at the same time, Shaleh B'Tevasai, not for his benefit. It was going to leave. It was going to leave its mark, and he'd have to deal with it. He'd have to deal with it. Now, there is a question that's asked about this entire story of Yehuda and Tamar, which we know this was the union that would bring about David HaMelech and Mashiach. And the question is, you know, why did it have to happen in such a bizarre way? Why did it have to happen in such a way that actually on the surface seems wrong? And the ultimate good is coming from it. Why does it have to be this way? So one explanation that I heard was, and again, this is really a kind of Kabbalistic explanation. That's something that's easiest for us to comprehend concept to comprehend. But there is a concept that, you know, anytime something good is going to happen, especially on a scale like what was meant to happen here, the Satan, the angel that's appointed on challenging us, tries to interfere and break it up. That's the power of the Satan. When good things are about to happen, he tries to get involved and break it up. But the way that he is, so to speak, the way he is prevented from getting involved is if basically what happens is cloaked in what appears like evil. If it's cloaked in a not kosher way, that keeps him away, because that makes him say, oh, this is not good. This is something bad. I mean, very simplistic with this. But there is such a concept that because there was such a monumentous good that was supposed to come out of here, it had to be cloaked in an impure way so that the Satan would stay away. Otherwise, he'd get involved and break it up. So what I want to add from that here is that, you know, again, the purpose of the whole act being this way was because of the fact that the Satan had to be cloaked in impurity to keep the Satan away. Well, Yehuda was going to have to be part of that, even though it was going to have its negative effect on him, according to this. It was going to have his negative effect. Shaleh B'Tevasi, the Medrash says. It wasn't for his benefit in the sense that there would be some kind of negative effect left on him. But it had to be that way. It had to be that way. It had to be that this whole act happened in such a seemingly impure way with all its repercussions, because it's only in this kind of a cloak and this kind of a manner that the Satan is prevented from getting involved and trying to break things up. Okay, so the first Medrash that we have here is a Medrash that says that Yehuda was not doing this willingly, but rather it was against his will. Now, okay, it was against his will. Now there's another Medrash. The other Medrash is like this. Let's go back to our Parsha. Let's go back to page 210. And, okay. So, basically, he propositions her. And she says to him, what are you going to pay me? So, Pasuk is Zion, verse 17, Vayomer, and he said, Anechi ashalach di izim enat zayin, I'll send you a goat. Vatoymer im titen erabandat sholchecha. You got to leave security. Vayomer, so Yehuda said, Ma'are vayna shereten loch. What security should I give you? Vatoymer, and she said, Choy samcha, says choy samcha means your signet ring. Lost the place, just 1 second. Okay, choy samcha, your signet, upsi lecha, your wrap, umatcha shabiyadach, and your staff that is in your hand. Vayitin lo, he gave it to her, vayavoye lecha, he was with her, batar lo, and she became pregnant. So, she asked for three things as security. The Medrash says that when she was asking for these three things, there was something deeper going on. So the Medrash says, Amar Rav Chunya said, Nisnatza ba Ruach HaKodesh. Ruach HaKodesh sparked in her. When she was asking for these three things, the reason she asked for these three things was really an expression of Ruach HaKodesh, of the spirit of holiness, a certain level of prophecy that was going through her. And the Medrash says that each one of these things actually alludes to something greater, something more. Your signet, Zu Malchus. That refers to monarchy, the Jewish monarchy. And it brings a pasuk to show the connection between the two. Upsilecha. Psilecha means your wrap. What is that referring to? Zu Sanhedrin. It's referring to the Sanhedrin. And Matcha, your staff, refers to Melech HaMashiach, refers to Mashiach. So basically, when she said, give me these three things, what she really was saying is, give me the Jewish monarchy, give me the Sanhedrin, give me Melech HaMashiach. This is what I'm going to be receiving here. This is what's going to be happening between us. And so when she did this, again, she was saying this with Ruach HaKodesh, whether she realized it or not. But this is what she was doing. There was something, as the Medrash is trying to tell us, is something much bigger than what meets the eye that's happening here. Now, if we look back at the, let's go back to the Psukim, Pasuk Yutes, verse 19, Vatoka Vatelech. She got up, she went. She removed the veil from her, and she again put back on her clothing of her widowhood. And the pasuk says that Yehuda tried to pay her, couldn't find her. Okay, now turn the page, look at page 212. Pasuk Chaf Dalet, verse 24. Vayikim Ishleish Chadashim. And it was after around 3 months passed, by Yugad Yehuda Lamar, it was told to Yehuda saying, Zansa Tamar Kalasecha, your daughter-in-law has committed harlotry, Vimine Harelis Nunim. Not only that, she has conceived by it. But Yehuda said, take her out and she shall be burned. Basically, she was not permitted to marry, and therefore Yehuda considered what she did an act that she was liable to be put to death. Now the Medrash comments on these words, "Vegam hinei haraliz nunim." Like let's take a look at those words. It says, "Zansa tamar kalasecha," she was mezana. Vegam, and also, behold, she's pregnant from it. You know, it could have very well just said Yehuda was told that she became pregnant from Zeus. It's a lot of words here. So the Medrash says that Medrash gives an interpretation here like this. So the Medrash says, "V'gamhina yahavre leznunim," and behold, also she has become pregnant from this act. Melameh shayis metapeches al kresa. This teaches us that she used to pat her stomach. V'aymeres and say, "Melachem ani muberes. I'm pregnant with kings." I am pregnant with redeemers. Which means, according to the way the Mefarshim explain, is that they were saying to him that she committed znus. Not only that, she's proud of it. She's proud of it. Now, again, but what is she saying? She's saying, I'm having kings, I'm having redeemers. I mean, you know, if this is what she's walking around telling everyone, people should be wondering, like, you know, what's going on? Or they think she's crazy? I mean, what's exactly going on here? So, I think the pshat is that it's not like, you know, she was walking around telling everybody, you know, I'm pregnant with kings, you know, from this child will come kings and redeemers. But clearly, she was, maybe when she would walk around on her own, she would, like, you know, tap herself on the stomach and say this to herself. Because she understood the ramifications. She understood what lies in this pregnancy. But others see her walking around doing that, you know, think that she's not embarrassed of what she did. But the Medrash here is saying, what we should take out of the Medrash right now is the fact that, again, Yehuda did it, according to the Medrash, Yehuda did it against his will, because kings and great people and Mashiach had to come from this union. And she understood. She understood, or she knew, and at some level she had Ruach HaKadosh that said that the future of the Jewish people all lies in here. So again, we're the Medrash is clearly telling us that, you know, Tamar's intentions here were not just intentions of being married. It was an intention of understanding the ramifications of what was supposed to be happening here. What's supposed to be coming from Yehuda, what was supposed to be coming from his children, if Asakhna comes from his children, it comes from him. It was the future of the Jewish people, the ultimate future of the Jewish people had to come from this, and she understood that.
Was she the daughter of Shem?
According to some.
Was Shem still alive?
I don't know.
Shem came to, and says, hey, you know, before, it's going to be twins in your...
That was Rivka.
She didn't do anything.
If she was in the same house with Shem, and he's an Avi...
Shame's not living there.
Huh?
I don't understand what you're saying. Yehuda took her wife for his sons.
Let's go back.
Yeah.
Yitzchok married a woman. She had twins.
Yeah.
And it says she went and inquired from Hashem. She went to Shem.
Okay, Shem Ve'Aver, yeah.
And he told her that there was...
two nations.
So if she's the daughter of Shem, I don't know if that... it means the granddaughter, great-granddaughter of Shem.
Maybe.
She goes back to, you know, and she's in his house.
Whose house?
In the house of Shem.
Because she went back there?
She went back to...
okay.
And... he had a navio, and he saw that, you know, this is what's going to be from this.
You want to know how she knew? She knew because Shem said it to her?
It could.
Perhaps.
I don't know if he was alive at the time.
Perhaps, I don't know. It doesn't, say that. It just says that she had Ruach HaKadosh, and that she understood. The point is, whatever way she understood, but whatever she did here right now, right,
mm-hmm,
disguising herself, trying to get him, it was all about understanding what's supposed to be happening here on a much higher level. It's not just about marriage, not just about a union. Mm-hmm. It's about what is supposed to, what the future of the Jewish people is supposed to come from this. Now, Reb Chaim Shmulevitz asked the following question, and it really is a very basic question. And that question is, okay, so, you know, she has a certain level of understanding what's going on here. She knows great things have to happen. Okay? But how did she think that Yehuda was going to do this. I mean, she went there, sitting there on the way, right? He's passing by. Did she really think that he was going to do this? Now again, especially according to the Medrash that says he wasn't going to do it, and he had to be forced into doing it. And she knew he was a great person. So just because she's sitting there, she really thought she was going
to
get him?
He was supposed to give her his son.
Yes, but how did she know he was going to do this when she sat there?
Because this was supposed to happen.
How does she know?
She knows he was supposed to be, what do you call it?
But Yehuda wasn't doing it, so how did she?
I know she said he had to do it.
But he wasn't doing it.
Huh?
He wasn't
no,
doing
had
it.
She had it in a way to make him do it.
But how did she think it was going to work? Did she really think that he was going to go just because he sees a woman who looks like a prostitute that he was going to go after her? He was a great man. This was Yehuda. Says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz that the answer is that a person who really wants to accomplish something will basically do whatever it takes to get it done.
You may not know it's going to happen.
You don't know it's going to happen. And probably the chances under normal circumstances that this was going to work
were nil.
The chance of it happening were a million to one. But at the end of the day, if there's something important to you and something that you know has to get done, you're going to try whatever it takes. And at the end of the day, it worked.
Oh.
Because at the end of the day, what happens is that a person does whatever they can do. They put the rest in Hashem's hands. And whatever happens, is going to happen. But from their part, they know they have to do something. And even if it doesn't make any sense that it could work, but if something has to happen, you do whatever it takes. You take your chances. It can be a million to one, but you're going to take that chance anyway. And when you do that and put your trust in the Ribbono Shel Olam, the Ribbono Shel Olam takes care of the rest. So therefore, it didn't make sense for her to think that he was going to do it. But because she knew and she wanted so strongly to be the mother of this future of the Jewish people, that she just took a chance to see maybe it'll work. There was nothing else to do. Maybe it could work. If you really want to do something, there's something important for you to accomplish, you'll do whatever it takes, no matter how much the odds are against it. And you put trust in the Ribbono Shel Olam that it will succeed. Now the Gemara tells us. Now we know that after Yehuda told her, let's look back again. It says, we'll take a look in Pasuk Chaf Hei. He mutseis, she was taken out. V'yishalcha el chamiya leimar. And she sent to her father-in-law saying, Le'isha sher'ei l'loi, to the man that these belong to, anoichi hara, it is from him I become pregnant. V'atoymer, and she said, Akarnar l'miachaisemes hapsil v'mato ha'ela. Recognize now to whom are these things. Vayaker Yehuda recognized Vayomer Tzadka. And he said, she's right. Mimeni, it is from me. Ki akeilu nesati l'sheila b'ni, because I did not give her to Sheila my son. Okay. So the Gemara learns from here that it is better to allow yourself to be thrown into a fiery furnace than to embarrass someone. Because she didn't finger him. She basically said, whoever these belong to, this is the father of this child. She did give him an out. She gave him an out. He could have gotten out of it. So the Gemara learns that it's better to allow yourself to be thrown into a fire than to cause someone shame. Now, based on what we have been learning until now, based on what the Medrash says, that Tamar understood what was meant to come from this, right? She understood what was meant to come from this were kings and redeemers and great people and Sanhedrin. She understood what was supposed to come from this. But she was still willing to give it up. She was still ready to give it up so as not to embarrass someone. Meaning, she's giving up here in this case where she is giving up her life not to embarrass someone. You know, giving up your life itself is not a small thing. But she also is giving up all that future that she was trying to create. The future of the Jewish people that she wants to be the mother of, she's giving that all up. so as not to embarrass someone. Which means that she comes, that she realizes that perhaps she, it's not meant for her to be that way. And she knows the potential is there. If she would live, it would happen. But it's not meant to be. If it's not meant to be because she can't embarrass him, then it's not meant to be coming from her. But again, it's something that she knows that if she would survive, she would be, she has the, it's all there in her. It's all planted, the seeds are there all in her. And if she would be living, it would all come from her. But she understands it can't happen through the embarrassment of someone else. And she's ready to go ahead and give that up so as not to embarrass someone. Okay. Next thing that I want to do...
At the end of that process, it says he didn't know her anymore.
Yeah, let's move on to something else right now.
And he says that
let's here. Move on to something else. Okay. Let's take go back. Let's take a look at page 202.
What floor? What?
Page 202. Okay, so this is where Yaakov sends Yosef to go and check up on his brothers. And Pasuk Chaf, Va'ata, so their brothers say, Va'ata l'chuv na'argeyu, let's now go and kill him. V'nashilcheyu ba'achar ha'beiris, and let's cast him into one of the pits. Va'amarnu, we will say, Chayara chalasu, a wild animal devoured him. V'nir'em ayu chalameisav, and then we'll see what will be with his dreams. Vayishma Reuven heard, Vayatzileu miyadim, and he saved him from their hands. Vayoymer lo nakenu nafesh, and he said, let's not kill him. Vayoymer leyam Reuven said, Atishbechu dam, don't spill blood. Hashlichu oisel abar hazeh asher bamidbar, cast him into this pit that's in the desert. Vayatishlichu bay, but don't touch him, meaning don't directly kill him. This is what he was telling them. You know, if you want to get rid of him, why do you need to go ahead and kill him directly? Throw him into the pit and do it in a more indirect way. That was what he was saying to them. The Torah is telling us, why did he do this? Laman hatzel lo yisai miyadam, in order to save him from their hands, lashivay el aviv, to bring him back to his father. So, okay. Vayihi, and it was, kasher bo Yosef alechav, when Yosef came to his brothers, Vayavshitu es Yosef es kutantai, so they stripped Yosef of his cloak, es ksenes hapasim esher alav, the fine linen cloak that he was wearing. Vayikachu, they took him, vayashlichu esay abayra, and they cast him into the pit. Vabarek ein baymayim, the pit was empty, there was no water in it. So the commentary of Rashbam points out that it's got to be there is no water in it. Because if there was water in it, then he would have drowned. And then the whole idea that Reuven was doing this to save him wouldn't make sense. It's got to be there was an empty pit. Because there's an empty pit, he's not going to drown in the water. And at a certain point of time, Reuven will come back and get him. So that he doesn't die of starvation, let's say. Okay. So that's the way the Rashbam learns. But Rashi quotes a famous Gemara on the words, V'abar reik ein b'mayim, the pit was empty, there was no water. V'mashma shenemar, reik. Rashi quotes the Gemara. From the fact that the Pasuk says the pit was empty, any yadeh shein b'mayim? If it had water, wouldn't it be empty? So once you say it doesn't have water, that means it's empty. And if it say, once, I'm sorry. Once it says it's empty, then means there's nothing in it, right? Suktik tamad loimar ein b'mayim. Therefore the Pasuk came to say, no, there's no water in it.
But.
Yeah, what mayim ein b'mayim, there's no water. Avam nachashim akrabim yesh b'mayim. But snakes and scorpions, there was plenty of those there. So really, what happened here by Yosef was that Yosef was really cast into a pit that was dangerous. So, if so, we should have the question, what does it mean that Reuven tried to save him? Throwing him in a pit that's full of scorpions and snakes is not going to save him. So the Aruch Chaim addresses this issue, and Aruch Chaim says, just want to read it to you from inside, okay. Ki yada nemana. Reuven knew for sure. Ki chayas hasada hashlamalai. That the wild animals will be at peace with him. V'lo yoriu v'lo yashchisu. And they shall not destroy, hanachashav akrabim, these snakes and scorpions, bezera Yaakov, in the children of Yaakov. Meaning, a righteous person is not going to be affected by wild animals. That's what Reuven understood. Yeah. A holy person is not going to be affected. And therefore, he can throw him in the pit, and nothing's going to happen to him in the pit. Because Reuven understood, Yosef is the Zera Yaakov, the children of Yaakov. We're not dealing with simple people here, we're dealing with great and holy people here. And therefore, Reuven understood nothing in there was going to affect him. Now, but time is going to affect him. If he stays in that pit, right, nobody comes back to get him, he's going to starve to death. So on that, and he's not going to let him just die there out of starvation, as we find. What did Reuven do? He came back to the bar. By the time he came back to the bar, Yosef was gone. But we see that he came back to the pit because he wasn't going to let him starve. How did he let him go into the pit to begin with? The answer is, Reuven was sure, Reuven had no question, that anything dangerous in there would not touch Yosef. That's how the Or HaChaim explains. The Torah Tamima has an interesting explanation. The Torah Tamima says, yes, he has this problem. You know, what does it mean that Reuven's trying to save him by throwing him into the pit if the pit has snakes and scorpions? So says the Torah Tamima, must be, they didn't see them. They looked in the pit, okay, and it seemed like there was nothing in the pit, and they didn't see the snakes and scorpions. Because if they wouldn't see the snakes and scorpions, so number one, what would it mean that Reuven tried to save him? And number two, says the Or HaChaim, if Yosef would have been thrown into that pit, I'm sorry, says the Torah Tamima, if Yosef would be thrown into that pit, and they know there's snakes and scorpions in there, and Yosef survives, then their brothers would like they wouldn't touch him anymore.
Yeah,
they wouldn't touch him anymore. To see a miracle like that, he would survive all that. Oh. They wouldn't touch him. So it, therefore, says the Torah Tamima, it's got to be that they didn't see it. Says the Torah Tamima that we can give support to this idea in the following way. He quotes. Let me just look at this inside. So he quotes, right, he quotes a Mefarish, that's a commentary, a Masechta Tamid, that says, the Ein Hashlacha Pachos Me'esrim Amma. When you use the word Hashlacha, to throw, Lahashlech, to throw, it means no less than 20 Amas.
No less than
20 Amas, than 20 cubits. If so, it says here, right, it says here in Pasuk Chaf Beis, somebody's ringing the bell. It says in Pasuk Chaf Beis, Vayemer Aleihem Reuven, Reuven said to them, I'll teach, wait a minute. It says in Pasuk Chaf Dala, Vayikachuhu, they took him, Vayashlichu Oisai Habayra, and they threw him into the pit. So if they threw him into the pit, how deep did the pit have to be? At least 20 amos. That's a long trip down.
60 feet down.
60 feet?
No.
40 at the most.
All right, 40.
That's not so simple either. But well, that's not so pushy either. It's just not 60. Kids. But okay, so that means that they threw him 20 amos down. Okay? So the Torah Tamima wants to suggest that, again, if they threw him 20 amas down, okay. They threw him at least 20 amas down. Now, the halacha is, a Hanukkah halacha, you can't put your Hanukkah menorah higher than 20 amas from the ground. Why?
No one can see.
Because people don't see that far. Your schach can't be more than 20 amas high, because then people don't really notice that far away. So therefore says Torah Tamima, if it says that they threw him, and throwing means no less than 20 amis, you know why they didn't see him? You know why they didn't see what's going on at the bottom of the pit? Because the bottom of the pit is 20 yamas down. 20 yamas down, you can't see. So he's trying to support his explanation that they didn't see it, because again, if we're able to say that the pit was 20 yamas deep, which from the word vayashlichu and they threw him, we know that has to be at least 20 yamas. So therefore, they couldn't see what was going on the bottom of the pit because it was 20 yamas away. And then he adds that it's clear that Yosef's survival in the pit had to be a miracle. Why is that? Because there is a halacha. The Gemara Yevamah says, if a man falls into a pit that's full of snakes and scorpions, me'idah lav shemes matirim esishtai. Anybody, meaning, if you know that there is this pit, and it's full of snakes and scorpions, you see a man fall in, he doesn't come out. That is enough for you to go and testify that this man died and allow his wife to marry. Because if this thing has the snakes and the scorpions and the standing poisonous ones in the pit, and somebody falls in, the halacha says, he's a goner. No question. No question. Right? If he falls in the water, you don't see him come up, that's not enough. That's not enough. But if he falls into a pit that has snakes and scorpions, poisonous ones, of course, then you could assume he's a goner. So if Yosef was put into such a pit, at the end of the day, we know he was, according to the Gemara and Shabbos, and he survived. Clearly says the Torah Tamima, his survival was nothing less than miraculous. Okay. Okay. One last thing here, and that is on page 216. And this is in the episode where Yosef has been sold. He is in the house of Potiphar, and Potiphar's wife tries to seduce him. So the Torah tells us that she tried getting him. He refused her. Then there was the day that no one was left in the house besides for him. And she was there. And Pasuk Beis reads about Tispaseo Bevigdoi. She grabbed him by his garment, Lay Mar Shechva Imi, to say, lay with me. He left his garment in her hand, and he ran away and he went outside. Okay. There is a medrash that says that when the Jewish people were standing by the Red Sea did not want to split. Basically, the Red Sea said, Hashem, give me a job to flow. That's my mission. And I'm not splitting for you. But the medrash says, once it saw the Arayna Shel Yosef, once they saw the coffin of Yosef that the Jewish people took out of Egypt, then the water ran away. Then the water split. And this is what it means when we say in Halal, Hayam Ra'a Vayanos. The sea saw and it fled. What did it see? It saw the Arayna of Yosef, the coffin of Yosef. That means there was something about Yosef that was able to force the sea to say that, okay, I'm giving up my mission, I'm giving up what I'm supposed to do, and I will part. What's the connection? So Rabbi Franz has an explanation that we find that he stresses the fact that it says Vayonas, he ran away, Vayetze Hachutza, and he went outside. So Rabbi Franz wants to suggests that the pasuk saying that he went outside is trying to bring out a certain point. We know that Avraham, when he told the Rabbanu Shalom that I have no children, right? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it says he took him outside. Hashem took him achutz. Hashem took him outside. And Chazal say that what Hashem was telling Avraham was that you go outside. You go outside your mazel. You go outside your natural fate. What your natural fate is meant to be, which is that you're not possible to have children. Go outside of that. Hashem raised him a bit beyond his nature. That even though naturally he wouldn't be able to have children, he took him outside. He took him outside of his nature to go ahead and say that he will be able to have children. Therefore, he wants to suggest that Vayetze Achutza, that when it says that Yosef went outside, of course it means it literal, but it also means the same idea. By Yosef running away, he went outside. He went outside his nature. He went beyond his nature. His nature would have said to acquiesce to her, but he went outside. He went beyond his nature, taking the same words that we find by Avraham Avinu and applying it here. Therefore, the connection between the sea splitting and Yosef is that the sea says, look, I have a job. Hashem wants me to flow. This is my nature. The nature that Hashem has put in me is my mission, is what I'm supposed to do. But then it sees Yosef. Yosef went beyond his nature. Once the merit of Yosef going beyond his nature now forced the sea to go outside of its nature too and to split. So Vayonis, Yosef ran away. And Ayom Ra Vayonis. And the sea saw something and it ran away and it fled. It fled from the Aron of Yosef. It fled from the Aron of Yosef because when Yosef held back, which by doing so he was going beyond his nature, that now forced the Red Sea to go beyond its nature also and to split.